Hearty greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
This evening, we continue our preview of Sunday's BMW Berlin Marathon in Germany. Three great African runners could be chasing a new marathon world record in this 44th edition of the Berlin race. Olympic champion Eliud Kipchoge and former world record holder Wilson Kipsang, both from Kenya, will be on the starting line, as will defending champion Kenenisa Bekele of Ethiopia. Last year in Berlin, Kenenisa clocked 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 3 seconds, only 6 seconds off the world record set by Kenya's Dennis Kimeto during the 2014 BMW Berlin Marathon. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Kenenisa Bekele ahead of the race and asked him if he's ready to defend his title.
I hope, you know, I will run good again. I prepare well, and of course, this year will be different than last year, so will be also strong and great race.
Of course, you've got Wilson Kipsang, whom you beat last year, and the Olympic champion, Eliud Kipchoge. You know that very well. Have you prepared differently because you have these two great runners in the race?
I couldn't prepare, you know, differently. Just I prepared as I prepared before. Of course, this is a race, you know. We will see what's going on, you know. So,
is the body good? You're feeling good? No problem?
Yes, my feeling is good. Yes, my body, okay, and good.
2:03:03 last year, 6 seconds outside the world record. Do you think you're in similar shape to what you ran last year?
Yes, quite similar. So we will see now.
We will see indeed whether Kenenisa Bekele can add another world record to his star-studded athletic resume. Our Voice of America listeners will remember Kenenisa is a 3-time Olympic champion and the current world record holder at both 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters. Meanwhile, the energetic Andy Edwards also caught up with Kenya's reigning Olympic marathon champion. Once again, here's Andy.
The Olympic champion, Eliud Kipchoge, is three great runners. And a strong field as well going into Sunday's BMW Berlin Marathon. Eliud, when I see all the demands upon your time, and here's me, yet another journalist, queuing up to do an interview for you, is that hard to be keeping on talking to people? You know, we're a couple of days away from the race. Is that also a drain on energy, and do you have to be careful that you don't do too much of it? But otherwise, because everybody wants you to run super, and the others, Kenenisa and Wilson, but you end up saying, I'm so tired, I can't run well.
Actually, to run up and down for press conference is really a big pressure. But all in all, when you are in a certain stage in athletics, then you need to go with that pressure and handle all the press and everything. Yes.
Historians of track and field, we look back and think 2003 World Championships, Paris, you winning the 5,000 metres just ahead of Kenenisa Bekele. Did you ever think that you would one day be a marathon runner? And, of course, there's Kenenisa. He's lining up against you with Wilson on Sunday. Did you think you would make that move up to the road and the marathon?
I didn't think I will in the future run a marathon. As my mind was like, well, to run track and cross country those times, yeah.
Patrick Sang is your coach, and I've been looking at some great videos online available of you and the training group doing reps in Kenya and Patrick there. I mean, how important has he been in your career, and indeed as you made the move to the marathon from the track?
It's really very important. It's really critically crucial in my life, in my career in athletics, yes.
In May, you ran on in Monza in Italy on that Formula One circuit, and you were just outside 2 hours. And from the press conference today in Berlin, you were saying, I think it's fair to say, it gave you a lot of strength, you know, mental strength and confidence from that. I mean, can you just say more? Because, of course, they were unusual conditions. It's not the, it wasn't the typical marathon. What did you gain from that?
I gained the confidence that anything is possible in this world.
Everyone's looking forward to Sunday. Not only a great race, but of course, talking about world records, but do you feel this could be a special race? If you can somehow put yourself outside, when you look at the three of you, it could be a race that people talk about for many years to come.
I think this will be a good race. It's a race whereby even when you see in the internet, everybody's talking about. I think it's the best race. Yeah.
Elliot, thanks very much. Everybody looks forward to BMW Marathon, Berlin Marathon on Sunday. All the best, Elliot Kipchoge. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We heard Olympic champion Eliud Kipchoge say how his coach, Patrick Tsang, has been critically crucial in his life and his career in athletics. Energetic Andy asked Coach Tsang, did you always think Eliud Kipchoge would be a special runner?
Incidentally, Eliud and I come from the same village, but I got to know him later. Incidentally, also, his mother was my kindergarten teacher. Since the time I came into contact with Eliud, as a young guy, he used to come to me for a training program. I would do it without asking him where he was from. But eventually, I got to know that we were from the same village. From then on, I continued helping him. But what was unique with him from the word go is the fact that he was really keen on improving on performance, his personal performance, even at that early age. That is going back to 2002. When I first walked with him.
It's also struck me as one of the many reporters interviewing Eliud, his mental sharpness. And he said in Berlin 2 years ago how important it was to be mentally fresh. Physical tiredness, you can recover quite quickly. But if you get stale mentally, and it's the way his mind works, and as an observer in a marathon, mentally he seems often to dominate his rivals. Is that fair comment?
I think it would be a fair comment, and I think it comes from a long history of how he started running, how he values running, and how he wants to take running to the next level.
Was it hard to make the transition to turn Eliud into a marathon runner? Of course, we know about his success on the track, but not everybody makes that change, and he did it, it seems, without a lot of problems.
We had to go through a series of consultation, discussion, and we agreed and he understood that what it meant to change. Because what we looked at the age where when he was not getting gold medals anymore, we asked ourselves, what is he going to achieve more if he stays on the track? And then we agreed that there was nothing much more to achieve. And then we asked ourselves the next question, would it be better with the talent that he has to try something else? And the consensus was that, you know, it was the right time, the right moment to try something else, and that was trying the marathon business.
Going into Berlin, what did that experience in May in Monza on the Formula One circuit give him? When he ran just outside 2 hours, and of course, a lot of talk, will this be the first sub-2-hour marathon, admittedly in special conditions, but did he gain a lot from that? Did it help him coming into this race?
I think the confidence went up because, first of all, it was something that many people believe it was not possible, but he brought it close to reality. And I'm sure it has given him a lot of confidence going forward to any other marathon that, you know, it's possible. He was able to recover like any other normal marathon. So I think coming here or going to any other competition, the flexibility to go beyond is already been shown that it's there.
It's got the makings of one of the great marathon races, hasn't it, in Berlin Sunday? I mean, last year it was superb seeing Kenenisa Bekele and Wilson Kipsang. Of course, they're back and they're both great runners, not just very good, but great. Yeah. Are you particularly excited yourself? I know you could say you're biased. Well, you're the coach of Eliud, but do you feel it could be a really great contest?
You know, I was a runner myself, and I know what it means to have many good athletes in a final of a competition where I ran in many championships. The excitement is that all these athletes have achieved in their own right great things. and they know themselves, they know their limitations. And I think for me, these are not athletes that are going to watch one another. These are athletes who are going to give their best on that material day that is this coming Sunday.
That's Patrick Sang, the coach of Olympic marathon champion Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya. And Coach Sang was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards ahead of Sunday's 44th BMW Berlin Marathon in Germany. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Battle of the Sexes, a new movie about the 1973 tennis match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, is being released in theaters across the United States on this Friday. King, then 29 years old, defeated the late Riggs, who was then 55 years old, in straight sets at the Houston Astrodome in Texas. Donald Dell has been described as a tennis pioneer. The 79-year-old Dell has been involved in tennis most of his life. A former USA Davis Cup captain, Donald Dell co-founded the Association of Tennis Professionals, or ATP, in 1972. He also was instrumental in the creation of the City Open Tournament here in Washington, an annual stop on the ATP Tour back in 1969. I asked Donald Dell, what is the legacy of that Battle of the Sexes match?
Well, just by happenstance, I happened to be at the match and saw it live in Houston in 1973. And it was an exciting time because going into that match, because Bobby had beaten Margaret Court so easily, everyone, I think, felt that Riggs would prevail. And as the match went on, it was very clear that Billie Jean was a lot stronger and a lot better, and Riggs was getting tired. But I think much more importantly, that in the bigger picture, you know, you often hear the phrase battle of the sexes, depending on what it is, whether it's an argument with your wife or whether it's something that you're betting with somebody. I mean, there's always that phrase, and I think the phrase is, you know, forever, battle of the sexes. I mean, it's something that a lot of people relate to and laugh about, and I think this match really set an interesting tone, and I don't say the match did it, but shortly, I believe a couple years thereafter, they came in with Title IX in collegiate the Congress passed Title IX, which basically said that women in collegiate sports had the right to the same number of scholarships and the same funding that men did, and that was a tremendous important change for women's sports across the country. I think the Battle of the Sexes was sort of a preview of that, and kind of got people thinking about that. You know, women could certainly compete and compete at another level. And of course, you've seen what's happened now. That's sort of been traveling on into the business and corporate world. I don't mean there's a Battle of the Sexes, but corporately, I happened to be watching something this morning on television. I think it was CNN. And they were saying they were talking about the game changers and the women who are so impactful in corporations. They named 26 different new CEOs, all of whom were women in major companies like Pepsi, like GM. And it was a very interesting, you know, 10-minute discussion. Well, I think that's kind of a fallout, if you will, from a fun, playful but competitive thing called Battle of the Sexes with Billie Jean and Bobby Riggs. I think they set a tone that's really still going.
You mentioned how you were at the match. Very much a spectacle. King comes onto the court kind of like Cleopatra, carried by four muscle men. Does tennis need more of that today?
Well, I think certainly that was a spectacular promotion, and I thought it was very clever. I always thought Billie Jean had a good chance, depending on the court service, because he's a wonderful volleyer. By happenstance, nothing to do with the Battle of the Sexes, I played mixed doubles with Billie Jean at Wimbledon the first 3 years she came over. And so I knew her quite well and liked her a great deal, and we were very good friends. And she was a very, very natural volleyer and a very good one, particularly in doubles. She won 10 Grand Slam titles in women's doubles, for example. And if you watch that match, I happened to watch just by happenstance, a thing on Billie Jean's life last night was on HBO, an hour show, and it showed her playing lots of different matches, and she was a great volleyer, particularly on her forehand volley, and she came into net against Bobby Riggs many, many times in that match. She did not stay back on the baseline and rally with him, and I think partly that was because the court was reasonably quick. It was not real fast, and it was not soft like grass, so the ball was bouncing at a pretty good height. And she attacked it very well and came in behind it a lot, if you watch that match or tape thereof. And that was one of her great strengths, was her quickness at net and her volleying ability.
Some people forget that Bobby Riggs beat Margaret Court before he played Billie Jean King. What about Bobby Riggs? How would you describe his legacy?
Well, Bobby, you know, Bobby in his own right, first of all, he was 55 years old in this match, but Bobby in his own right was a great professional player. I mean, if you talk to Jack Kramer about Bobby Riggs, he won the U.S. Open. He won a lot of national men's titles before he turned pro. And then on the pro tour, which was mostly the Kramer tour, he was a very big factor when he was 28 and 30, 32 years old. This was 25 years later that he was still playing, but he wasn't going to dominate her the way he did when he was a player at 30 years of age. I mean, the 55-year-old player is quite different than the 25-year-old, and he showed that. But in his own right, he was a very, very good player.
This was not the first and only battle of the sexes. There have been others, maybe not as publicized. I was thinking John McEnroe making those comments earlier this year about Serena Williams. Do you think we're going to see more of these type of matches, male against female, in the future?
Well, I think lots of people are talking right now about a match, a similar type match. But it really comes down to the right people. And certainly Serena would be an awfully good one to play. I think what people have forgotten is that Serena's great strength is her big serve. I mean, she serves, 130, 135 miles an hour with her first serve. So she's going to have a real weapon. And if there is a match coming up, it's going to really depend on who they pick the player. And, you're not going to pick some guy on the ATP men's tour who's 30 years old. But if you pick someone like John McEnroe, who's in his late 50s, and he was a very good player, but he's slower now, and his left-handed serve, which was very good before, is slower. And so I'm not as optimistic as John is. I think Serena will hold her own against any kind of veteran player. I'm just picking a number. Let's say over 50. She you don't want her playing someone 30 because the man player is going to be so more powerful as far as serving and volleying, but I think Serena can hold her own because of her serviceability.
In terms of prize money, at least at the Grand Slam tournaments, the male and female players now receive equal prize money. Do you credit Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs, with kind of sort of setting the foundation stone for that?
Not necessarily. I credit Billie Jean for it. Billie Jean, no question, lobbied very hard and got the U.S. Open to first do that, and the other slams, followed suit, but over a period of time. I mean, Wimbledon only decided to do it about 3 years ago, whereas the U.S. Open did it very, 20 years ago. I mean, and that was no question that was Billie Jean who was leading the charge to get equal prize money at the U.S. Open, and once that occurred, as I say, the U.S. Open, the USTA, was by far and away the earliest one to do that by some 10 or 15 years. And then it was followed really by the Australian came on. The French were still slow. And then they followed finally about 7 or 8 or 10 years ago. I don't know the exact date. And Wimbledon was the last to follow suit. But she was instrumental as a leader of that cause, I think much more than just the individual match of Battle of the Sexes. I think Billie Jean's personality and respect and perseverance had a major, major role because, as you see, subsequently to that, they named the tennis stadium the Billie Jean King Tennis Center out at the USTA and the US Open. So it tells you that the USTA had great respect for her.
Donald Dell, thank you for talking with us on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Well, it's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed it.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports with a package of African sports news is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin with the West African Regional Football Competition, known as the WAFA Cup of Nations, currently taking place in Ghana. Nigeria and Ghana will meet in the finals following their victories in the semifinals on Thursday. Steven Safro handed Ghana a 2-0 win over Niger, while Rabiu Ali of the Super Eagles scored the only goal against Benin Republic to set up the final between the two West African giants. CAF President Dr. Ahmed Ahmed is in Ghana for an executive committee meeting and a WAFA Cup final on Sunday. The CAF president told journalists on arrival in Ghana that they will be making some big decisions regarding African football in the next few days.
We are here for the executive committee meeting. As you know, we try to share this meeting to go to see what happened in Africa because CAF is for Africa. That you see that the meeting of the executive committee is held on every country in Africa. So we have a big agenda for this meeting, and I mean we are going to take a big decision here in Ghana, and we are happy to be here to discuss about the future of football.
Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission has charged the country's FA boss, Isha Johansson, and her Secretary General, Chris Karama, to court with abuse of office and misuse of public funds. The charges were leveled only hours after she announced her intention to seek re-election. Isha Johansson has denied the charges, saying she is focused on getting the job done.
If they do have a strong opinion against me, one way or the other, I don't know. And I certainly do not spend any time trying to listen to what people have got to say, particularly about me, because you can't always like everybody. And that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to get a job done within 4 years. And what I'm able to do, I do it within the shortest possible time, given the constraints that I have.
In women's football, South Africa's Banyana Banyana advanced to the final of the COSAFA Women's Cup in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, in dramatic fashion on Thursday. Banyana Banyana came back from 3-0 down with 15 minutes to play to take their semi-final clash against Zambia to a penalty shootout, emerging 5-3 winners on penalties. Desri Ellis is Banyana Banyana coach.
We always believe that if we get one back, the momentum will shift, and this group is special. They deserve all the credit for the fight back and putting their bodies on the line and getting the victory, because I said to them, there's a lot of people back home who are counting on us, our sponsor Cecil, Safa, and the fans, and that's what they did today.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and have a good weekend. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. And that wraps up the September 22nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Working with their partners in the global coalition to defeat ISIS, Iraq's security forces have made significant progress in the mission to liberate all of the territory ISIS once held in Iraq. Speaking recently in Erbil, Iraq, Special Presidential Envoy for the Coalition, Brett McGurk, called the historic cooperation between the Iraqi security forces and the Kurdish Peshmerga essential to the recent victories against ISIS, also known as Daesh. Mr. McGurk took note of the cost of the fight on our heroic partners who have sacrificed so much in this fight. The Peshmerga have suffered almost 2,000 martyrs in this overall campaign, and the Iraqi forces have probably suffered five times more, he said. The sacrifice from the Kurdish Peshmerga is something that we, the United States, and the entire world really honor. We extend our condolences to the martyrs and to the families, and similar condolences to all those lost on the side of Iraqi security forces. Special Envoy McGurk emphasized that the battle against ISIS is not over and pointed to the upcoming fight in the northern city of Hawija, where it is estimated that some hundreds of ISIS fighters remain in control of the city. He urged continued cooperation between the Peshmerga and the Iraqi security forces so that ISIS's hold on Hawija is rooted out in a smart way. Mr. McGurk noted the political disagreements between the Kurdish leaders and the government in Baghdad, including over a proposed independence referendum later this month by the Kurdish regional government. The United States does not support the referendum. In a press statement, the White House said, "Holding the referendum in disputed areas is particularly provocative and destabilizing. We therefore call on the Kurdistan regional government to call off the referendum and enter into serious and sustained dialogue with Baghdad, which the United States has repeatedly indicated it is prepared to facilitate." The White House noted that the referendum is distracting from the efforts to defeat ISIS and stabilize the liberated areas. Special Envoy McGurk pointed out that the Iraqi security forces and the Peshmerga have fought as brothers against their common enemy. "It's very important that we remain united and focused on the efforts to defeat Daesh and ensure that they have a lasting defeat. This war is not over, and that's a critical message for everybody."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA News.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.